What's going on, everybody? Welcome into Bill's Chat Live. And for those of you listening on Spotify, this is Bill's Chat Podcast as well. We are recording this, we are live on Friday night on September 13th, the day after the Bills' huge AFC East victory over the Miami Dolphins by a score of 31-10. Luca, how are you doing tonight?
Fantastic. It's fun being live. It's been a while since we've done this. You know, we agreed this year behind the scenes that, you know, we're going to take a step back, go back to the old pod format and stuff. But even when we looked at the schedule, we recognized, of course, Thursday night game early in the season. You know, it'd feel weird doing a post-game podcast on a Sunday night after that. We used to have this regular live show slot for that kind of purpose. So it's fun to get in the seat, you know, the live seat. We're going to have the chat going, stuff like that. And I'm doing good because I'm excited to talk about a big win that happened in Texas, Josh, when ASU squeaked it out against Texas State. I'm just messing around. Of course, I was loving the memes all Thursday. And then what made it really funny, we'll get it out of the way real quick. What made it really funny is talking about you, but go ahead. Yeah, the Bills game, we'll get into it. Obviously, it's gone.
I would hope so.
It was done quick. And yet the ASU game was a nail biter. So I will say, when we got to the fourth quarter of the Bills game, my attention may have been elsewhere at that point, as it was 28-28 at a certain point in the Texas State game. But let's talk some Bills football.
Sammy's in chat tonight. Sammy, always appreciate you hanging out. The Bills get a 31-10 victory. And Luca, hand in the sky, I'd had the Bills losing this game. I put a prediction out on Bills chat on Wednesday. I had the Bills losing by a score of 27-21. I liked a lot of the variables in favor of Miami. I thought the short week would benefit them. I thought the speed on their offense, when you look at what the Bills are missing on their defense right now with Milano and Taron Johnson out. And then again, much like the first week of the season, Luca, the Bills lose a star on defense very early in the game as Terrell Bernard goes out on the first drive, does not return. We'll talk longer term about Terrell Bernard down the line, but in case you haven't heard, this is not a season ending injury. It's in that 3 to 4 week range. McDermott said multiple weeks. And he did say they're still discussing whether they're going to put him on injured reserve or not. And right now they decided not to put Taron Johnson on injured reserve, which I think is a great sign for Taron Johnson coming back. But Luca, there was obviously a bigger story in this game, particularly from the Dolphins side with Tua's concussion late in the game. We'll set that aside for now, because by the time Tua got hurt, I think this game was already decided. It was 31-10. What a statement game by the Bills. And my first takeaway from this game was, I feel like the Bills just sat back and let the Dolphins beat themselves. And in a lot of ways, use the emotion the Dolphins had in this game against them. And when you look at how the Bills got their points, it was an interception on the first drive that led to a touchdown for the Bills. It was a pick six by Ingram. It was an interception that also led to points. It was a Jordan Poyer unnecessary roughness penalty extending a drive, and then obviously the big long run by James Cook. And I thought the Dolphins had several situations where they panicked and went for it on fourth down where they probably should have just punted and played the long game. They totally messed up the end of half clock, but they were totally unraveling at that point. And I don't think this was by any means a great offensive game by the Bills. I thought this was just a Bills team going in there saying, yeah, I don't think you can beat us, so we're not going to do anything to beat ourselves. Let's just play ball, and we're pretty confident that at the end of this thing, we're going to have a higher score, and they did.
What was funny is I'm with you, by the way. Going into the game, it just, in my head, I couldn't somehow get over whatever feeling it was that, you know, the Dolphins would find it through. And yet, right out the gate, early on, there's this weird sense of comfort, Josh, that I had. Bills going down, scoring on that fourth down play, everything else that transpired afterwards, there was this weird sense of comfort or almost familiarity with it that it's like, yeah, this is yet another one of these games where the Bills are playing the Dolphins. And for whatever reason, and I love, for what it's worth, I forget what Dolphins player it was today that was quoted talking about it, but they outright acknowledged that there's something psychological going on with this matchup to them. And it's very apparent in the locker room, and they all hate it from a Dolphins perspective. And clearly that is exactly what it looked like. during the entire game. You saw one team, the Bills, comfortable, know what they need to do, team effort through and through. Shout out Ingram, of course, as you mentioned earlier with everything he did. The entire team, though, collectively worked out. And then from a Dolphins perspective, even a guy like Poyer, who was still just doing exactly what he used to do as a Bill, but it wasn't going his way on the Dolphins side, there's something going on with that Dolphins team that when it's a Bills game, they're tight. They're not comfortable. It's almost like they're waiting for something to go wrong, and it continuously did. And it was a thing of beauty, Josh. Last night was just an absolute thing of beauty from a Bills perspective, up and down the roster, even through a little bit of adversity, like you mentioned with Terrell Bernard's injury. I will say when that happened, Josh, it was flashbacks to the Jags game last year. It's like, oh no, a pectoral injury. He's already ruled out. And you're like, please, for the love of God, let it not be too bad. We learned today, of course, it's a better case scenario than what it could have been. But overall, the game itself, man, oh, just an absolute chef's kiss.
I want to pick up on what TJ said here. I feel like the Bills are making progress on figuring things out and will start to gel as a team on all three phases. Because I know James Cook had three touchdowns, Luca. And I know Ingram had two interceptions, one that went for a touchdown. But when I think about the story of this game, it's not James Cook, it's not Ingram, it's Sean McDermott and Bobby Babich. They, over the last six quarters, have given up a total of 13 points on defense. And Marvin Harrison, Jaylen Waddle, and Tyreek Hill in combined have eight catches for 69 yards against this Bills secondary that everybody said lost too many bodies to be able to go out there and compete. Now, our show, other shows that cover the Bills more in depth, you know, the smart fans, like the Roy Collins, the McChronicles, those folks like watch the team closely. They know that Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, Tre'Davious White were not the best versions of themselves last year. Rasul Douglas was like a gift from the heavens at the trade deadline. And Christian Benford has been a steady Eddie that is slowly progressing into that star status. And Luca and I have even said, I think by the end of the year, he could be our best player. This was a Sean McDermott game. This was a Bobby Babich game. Down arguably your three best defensive players. I don't even know if it's arguable. You're talking about Taron Johnson, Matt Milano, and Terrell Bernard to go out there and hold the Dolphins to 10 points, to make Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle not even threats. Shout out to X, by the way. That's the guy, Luca, who runs our college football dynasty.
I could figure it out.
Okay. I've gained so much faith in Sean McDermott that he's going to be able to figure it out no matter what hand he's dealt. He was dealing with a half a deck of cards last night, and Luca, he kept coming up aces.
I love you just painting it. I think that is, national pundits have even recognized this. McDermott, Babich, coaching, the depth was on full display. The coaching and just having an understanding of what everyone's responsibility is from all three phases, as TJ pointed out, shout out TJ. But overall, it's one of those things where it's mind blowing because I think we are even documented. I won't even pull it this way. We were not comfortable with Ingram if he had to come up and play a significant role on this defense for whatever reason that may have been. And it felt like we were staring down the barrel that could potentially happen due to injuries. Now we find ourselves in that circumstance where that is in fact the case. And yet he comes up in a big, big game when we are facing the team that I think you are a little bit more in this way, but I still do agree with it, where this is probably the most dangerous or one of the most dangerous offenses we're going to play all season. And Ingram played a massive role in shutting that down. But then going back to McDermott and Babich, you have this entire defensive scheme and unit understanding exactly what they need to do, doing their job, and putting on. It doesn't matter if you're the third string Mike, it doesn't matter if you're the backup safety, it doesn't matter if you're the fourth string corner, whatever your job is, if you have to get thrusted into action, you know exactly what you need to do to have this game plan knocked down to a T and perfected against against whoever the opposition is, no matter what the situation is. And Tyreek Hill doesn't matter. What was amazing to me, Josh, was there's a moment in last night's game where Tyreek Hill was part of a gadget play. I want to say it's the one where he squat real low outside the tackle, quick, you know, jet sweep across. He can't get that angle. He can't turn it upfield at all. And he looked visibly upset that that could not be happen for him. And it was, to me, that is something where it's not like he's upset because he's like, damn, they can match my speed. He's upset because he's like, they know what I'm trying to do. And they're just absolutely dominating what I'm trying to achieve. Like, you're not going to hold Tyreek behind the line. That is impossible. That is what world-class speed gets you. But if Tyreek Hill can't actually get that edge on you, if he just has to run out of bound with how fast he is, he's still frustrated because he believes he should be able to get that edge on you. And getting frustration into Tyreek Hill, into Jaylen Waddle, where you even have the commentators pointing out how it's upsetting seeing them just sit on the bench and not be active with their team late in a game that's already lost. I think that speaks volumes in understanding that we absolutely demolish them both physically and mentally, and everything is now running back through Buffalo as we love.
What did you think about that? I thought Herbstreit, I mean, I like Kirk Herbstreit. You do too. And I love when announcers go outside the box. Hi, Charlene. We always appreciate you hanging out. TJ, I want to get to your next question in a second. I thought that was kind of a cheap shot at Waddle and Hill personally. Yeah, because they just lost their starting quarterback to what at the time and to this moment we all think could potentially be a career ender, certainly a multiple week injury. And beyond that, he's their friend. And so just having seen all of that happen, it's understandable why they'd be down. The game is out of hand. It's over. And the fact that they aren't up clapping and rah-rah for Skylar Thompson and Robbie Chosen Anderson in garbage time, I think I want to give them a pass. And I don't think that speaks to the what kind of leaders they are. I think it's understandable, the human side of things, why they'd be sitting there looking like they're in shock.
Yeah, I think the way that they approached it was a little bit, you know, below the belt. I do believe that. I think that was them getting into a little bit of an assumptive kind of situation where, you know, the game's out of hand and it's almost like they're just taking the easy way of, you know, you'd like to see something more. It's like, instead, maybe you could do, you know, highlight it for what it most likely is based on what is going on, exactly what you kind of painted out there. And realistically, internally, they're just frustrated with their own performances because they're competitive and they want to do great things. Tyreek Hill, even when it was 31-10 in the same regard earlier on in the game, there was the same shot of him up clapping, saying, let's get things going. Like, he was doing that. Now you're showing them, as you put it, after Tua's injury situation, after the game is clearly lost at that point, it's late in the fourth quarter. It's like, I mean, no, they need to, people process, you know, those kinds of situations in a letdown like that differently. And I don't think anyone else on that sideline, anyone on the coaching staff, you know, the team, regardless of who they are on the team in general, I don't think anyone's going to hold it against them, for instance, and be like, oh, Tyreek, you're a bad leader now. Like, I don't know how much I can put into your word when you are trying to get, let's say, rah-rah or whatever you want to call it. They were just processing the situation for what it was as best as they could or in the most comfortable way they could. And I guess to them, it's just sitting back, soaking it in, you know, not being happy about it. But overall, that's just how they need to process it. And I think Kirk Herbstreit and I mean, L. Michaels has been a little bit unhinged for a couple of years now. I love it personally. I think is it always great? No, I think some comments are like, all right, Al, you could have kept that one off the mic, but it is refreshing just in a different sense. That I don't hate it. I can tell you that. So, but overall, it was a little bit below the belt at their character. I don't think it really speaks that much. Tyreek and Waddle know who they are. The team knows who they are. And overall, I don't think that really meant too much more.
And it's been a week for Tyreek Hill, starting on Sunday with the arrest situation. And then, you know, fast forward into Thursday, losing a massive division game at home and then losing his quarterback to a very serious injury. So very willing to cut him some slack for not looking like a happy-go-lucky sideline cheerleader in that scenario. McChronicle, pulling the starters was fine, leaving an already banged up A-chain out there baffling. 100% agree. I did not understand why A-Chain was still getting carries in garbage time. Unless for whatever reason, they totally played up his ankle injury and it's fine. But even then, running back tread on the tires, this guy is a superstar. He is a superstar. Unnecessary hits at that point in the game. That's what Jalen Wright is for. Get him out there. I understand that Jeff Wilson was hurt. Roy Collins says sitting Hill and Waddle was the right thing to do. I want to talk about TJ's point because this transitions me into my next thought. We have heard that, you know, oh, it's Josh Allen and a bunch of also-rans, or Josh Allen's got to put this team of average players on his back and carry them across the finish line. TJ says a group of good unknown players that play well as a group will always outperform a group of superstars that just play next to each other. I agree with that. The whole 111 thing, everybody do your job in sync together, is always going to do better than 11 superstars out there freelancing. I also think that we saw it. A lot of people saw it. This defense has more talent than we gave it credit for, despite the jarring losses of Hyde, Poyer, Tre'Davious White this offseason. And I think when you look at the guys on that defense, Ed Oliver and Greg Rousseau are like, wait a minute, we're former first round picks. We're pretty damn good. Von Miller's like, I'm not going to have to wait too long after I retire to get a gold jacket, guys. I had a messed up ACL 2 years ago. I'm not washed. And we're going to talk about him in a little bit because holy cow, Luca.
Yeah.
Rasul Douglas has a lot of skins on the wall, to borrow a term from Brandon Bean in this league, and is still playing at a very high level at the age of 30. Taron Johnson was an all-pro last year. Matt Milano was an all-pro the year before. Terrell Bernard had a Pro Bowl caliber season last year. So this team has talent, and I think these guys have been taking it personally. I think there's a lot of Coach McDermott coaching these guys up. I think there's a lot of buying into what they're doing, and so far so good. It's very early. I talked about Von Miller. I think everything we've seen this season, Luca, whether it's Jamarcus Ingram, I'm so in love with the Jamarcus Ingram story. I can't get enough of it. What a great dude. What a great story. My favorite thing to happen to the Bills though so far is Von Miller. Because we had a show this summer where we talked about like pie in the sky. Like, what's the biggest wild card on this team that could really change the fortune of this team? And we both said, well, if Von Miller returns to Von Miller form, like, watch out. Most of our concerns are gone. Well, Von Miller looks like Von Miller. It's two games. It's not the best offensive lines in the world. Austin Jackson's a former first-round pick who's gotten a lot of credit over the last, I would say, two games this year and about last half of last year for kind of having a Spencer Brown kind of development. Started off slow, really hit the ground running last year, and has been playing at a higher level. And Von Miller looked good last week against the Cardinals, looked good this week. And it's not just the sacks, it's the pressures, it's the burst. And he's playing with power, he's playing with speed, he's playing with confidence. And you combine that with what we've seen from Greg Rousseau, what we know Von Miller and Daquan Jones can do. Luca, my biggest concern about this defense coming into the season, despite everything going on in the secondary, was where's the pass rush going to come from? We're two games in, and I'm not even thinking about where the pass rush is coming from. To me, it's going to be which one of these guys is going to have the game, because I know somebody's going to.
The biggest surprise in all the best way possible is Von Miller. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned in the summer, we called him a wild card. Let's see what we get. I believe we were both in a realistic expectation of we're not going to get the gold jacket Von Miller. We're not even going to get the Von Miller we had 2 years ago pre-ACL injury. We're probably going to get, most likely, let's hope, like an 80% Von Miller, right? 80% of what we had 2 years ago. What it really starts to feel like is we are getting the Von Miller we had pre-ACL injury 2 years ago. That explosiveness off the snap is clearly there. I mean, if you even want to sprinkle a PFF grade on this, Josh, last week's performance already made him, I think it's the seventh, if I'm counting this real quickly, right? The seventh highest graded pass rusher. And as you said, it's not necessarily about sacks, because for instance, last week he did not have a sack. So it's just
Von Miller.
Or sorry, Von had one, didn't he?
Yeah,
he had one. He got one. It's just, I look at Greg Rousseau's three and I just forget everyone else's. So overall, Von Miller, he had a sack last week. This week, this is where I really wanted to go with it. He influenced the play. It felt like time after time after time. And it was quite literally just because that get up off the snap was incredible. And eventually even Amazon was highlighting it as they should. And it's like, holy crap, Von Miller's back. If Von Miller is back to that form, Josh, are question marks with the defensive line, as you even kind of hinted to, they're gone essentially, because if you have Rousseau doing what he did week one, and if he continues to progress of who he is, Ed Oliver continues to be an absolute animal, or as what was it? Who said it this morning? One of the guys out there, I think it was Long, Chris Long. He said 100% canine, 100%. He got tested. He got his blood work done at Oliver. It came back 100% canine. And I was like, man, I love that saying. That's a really good one. So Ed Oliver still got that. If Von Miller's 100%, and then AJ Epenesa just goes back to being that kind of third key rotational piece that I think it suits him well. I think that's where he kind of sits overall, and he can step up when he needs to. The defensive line can take over and really disguise a lot of the discrepancies and issues you have behind you. And Baylen Specter coming in and having the green dot, you know, it was highlighted early on when he had got thrusted in there. He clearly screwed up, you know, in the end goal situation. That's 1000% on him. You can even see his head just like not know what he's looking at, and essentially like just leave Benford out to dry. Oh, man, I felt so bad for 47. I was like, oh my God. Like you watch it off the snap and Benford even feels like, what the hell, guys? 2v1 is not my
I know I'm good. I can't cover two guys at once.
Yeah. But circle back to that, you know, Specter figured it out. He started seeing it. He got in rhythm. And I think Specter, he's one of those guys where the athleticism I don't think is in question. It's just he's a coin flip if he's going to make the right decision. That comes with inexperience. He's battled through injuries. It's not like he has the game time under his belt. But overall, if he's going to have to get game time in there, the best thing you have for a Baylen Specter is literally that defensive line in front of him, because they are going to be able to handle and take off pressure for him so much by providing pressure to the other team. That is just the de facto way it works. If you have they always say, Josh, if you can win the trenches, it's the best way to win a game. That's the offensive side and the defensive side. That is where games are won and lost, is in the trenches. And right now the Bills are just absolutely flying off the defensive line right now. And it's Von Miller, thank you so much for being an absolute freak and giving us yet another reason to call you a freak, as you will become a first ballot Hall of Famer, because holy crap, I don't think anyone realistically saw this coming.
And there's two things I like about what's going on with Von Miller. One, I love the fact that he's playing better, and that seems like obvious. But two, I love the calculated approach the Bills are taking with him, despite the fact that he right now is clearly their second best, or I would say even first best. But the way Rousseau is playing, I'll give Rousseau a leg up. Edge rusher as far as pass rush goes, he only had 29 snaps yesterday, and he had 29 snaps against the Cardinals. They are very much limiting his snaps right now to keep that wear and tear down. They're recognizing his age, and they are really calculated about putting him in there on passing downs. Von Miller yesterday had 29 snaps, 22 of them were against passes. So the Bills are really aware of when it's a running situation, when it's a passing situation. By comparison, his first year in Buffalo before his injury in Detroit on Thanksgiving, he averaged 43 snaps a game. Greg Rousseau had 53 snaps. AJ Epenesa had 51. So I think AJ Epenesa is going to play a very important and very much non-rewarding job for this team. He's going to do a lot of the dirty work. He's going to take on a lot of the early downs. And then McDermott's always been you earn the right to rush the passer. Well, we're going to hold off on that this year. AJ, thanks for getting us the third down, but we're going to go ahead and bring Von Miller in. And let's not forget, folks, the Bills are also at some point relatively soon going to inject the NCAA sack leader from last year, Javon Solomon, onto this defense, who may not hit the ground running as a rookie, but it's just somebody else to add to the mix. So far, so good for this defensive line. Let's talk about the Terrell Bernard injury. You mentioned Baylen Specter. I thought, despite the fact that he really did mess up that check on the goal line, which you can understand, Miami gives you a lot of eye candy. You certainly understand it. And, you know, he was certainly out of place on that. I thought he played the run well. He played 62 snaps. Let's see what PFF thought. Yeah. So my eyes kind of agree with PFF. They gave him a 69.5 run defensive grade and 42 coverage. It's hard to tell, not really having watched it back on the All 22. My question now, though, is, Luca, the Bills are going to have a chance now to kind of take a breath. They have this mini bye before they play Jacksonville next Monday night. And in Terrell Bernard, in Matt Milano, and Taron Johnson, they haven't just lost studs, they've lost veterans. I wonder, with 11 days in between, despite the fact that I think Baylen Spector played well, if Sean McDermott might prefer a veteran like Nicholas Morrow in that spot to wear the green dot, kind of settle things down on defense, to be that he was a captain in Philadelphia last year. Just that kind of presence on the field, unless, you know, we didn't see training camp, unless it looks like his legs are shot. If things are relatively equal, I do wonder if McDermott and Babich might lean into the veteran thing. But so far, what we've seen out of, oh, Milano's down, Dorian Williams, you're up. No thought to tomorrow. And, you know, last night, Spector, you're up. Ingram, you're up. They haven't really cared about age, so maybe they won't start now.
I do question it, because realistically, if you think about it, Baylen Spector has always been in the mix, regardless if, you know, Morrow was there last season. Of course, you had other individuals, and Baylen Spector has been a guy where it feels like they want to push him in that direction. They want him to earn time. Obviously, the emergence of Terrell Bernard has complicated that a little bit, but overall, there's something they do like about him, that they're comfortable with throwing him into this situation now, that I don't know if I'm as sold as them wanting to go. Okay, they have basically the longest mini bye you can possibly have, of course, being Thursday to Monday, as you highlighted, it's 11 days. And it would make sense that if you want to implement someone else, you have plenty of time to do so. Get Nicholas Morrow up and going. And overall, you can continue to use Baylen Spector as that game day backup and move forward. I question that only because it feels like if you really wanted to go that path, why would it change from game day to preparation? I don't know. It's one of those things where if they trust Baylen Spector to be that guy needed in a pinch, why would you do it any other way with preparation? That's where I get with it. And I think Baylen Spector showed, as you pointed out in the run game, at least last night, the athleticism and understanding of what he needs to do in run fits is right there. Where him and Dorian need to work on, as clear as day, is pass coverage skills. But look, if you can rush the passer as well as you are right now, you're going to be able to disguise that once again as best as you possibly can. It's going to be there between them and the safety question marks that are still there, as well as, you know, as okay as they've been playing. The middle of the field as a whole is a little bit of a problem right now in pass coverage sense, but your boundaries are shut down. No one's getting your boundaries. Like, that's the greatest feeling in the world. Outside numbers, good luck. You got Benford, Rasul, and if one of them needs to come off for a couple of plays, it feels like they trust Elam. Maybe something switched there, and let's see what we got there. But effectively, your boundaries are shut off, so you just really can do as much as you possibly can. Cam Lewis can play that middle of the field as well. You're putting as many bodies as you possibly can in that middle to make those windows tighter, and the pass rush just needs to get home. I think that they're going to continue with Spector because I think they value athleticism and speed more than anything else. And yes, Nicholas Morrow's been around. Yes, he's a team captain. He's got tons of experience and understands what he would see in front of him at all times, where he'd be able to temper things down. He's going to be a game day active, and maybe they're going to kind of rotate in based on game flow and whatever the situation might be. Maybe it's not working out for Spector, but I think out the gate, Josh, this is going to be Baylen Spector's job until Terrell Bernard's back, unless something tells us otherwise. If something tells McDermott otherwise, that's where a change could happen. But as of right now, sitting here on Friday night, I think Baylen Spector is just going to be plugged in and continue to work on from there.
And the key word you mentioned there is athleticism. They love athletes at linebacker. Baylen Spector, coming out of Clemson, had a relative athletic score of 9.13 on a scale of 10, which is excellent. He had an elite composite agility grade, 4.640, 1.57 10 yard split, 36 inch vertical, 10.02 broad. I mean, this is an athlete. And we've talked before about Spector. There's been times the Bills have needed a body at linebacker. Last year in the playoffs, when they were down Terrell Bernard and Matt Milano, they were also down Baylen Spector. This year in training camp, Matt Milano goes down. Baylen Spector is not healthy. Hello, Dorian Williams. Now it's time for him to get his opportunity. I was calling for him not to make the roster. They don't listen to me, thankfully, because a lot of times I'm proven wrong. But this is a great opportunity for him. And maybe he is this year's Terrell Bernard, where he gets an opportunity and he runs with it. I'm excited to see it. The fact that the Bills are 2-0, it feels like they have a little bit of house money in their pocket where they can take some chances on some young guys. And I would say that when you look at the upcoming games these Bills have, Jaguars, Ravens, Jets, I do think run stopping is definitely a priority. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens, but the Bills have bought themselves some time with these wins, and it certainly looks like they are ready to take on the challenge no matter who's on the field. Let's talk about the offense, though, Luca. James Cook, 3 touchdowns, a goal line touchdown. In this economy, James Cook, a run from the 1 yard line. And for me, the thing that I have been dying to see James Cook do, what was evident on that long touchdown run where he beat Jordan Poyer to the end zone, he was super decisive through the hole, no dancing, and then he immediately busted outside where there's a lane. When you are a smaller speed back like James Cook, who played on a Georgia offense that was better than everybody else they played against, or at least as good, it's so easy in college to just rely on speed. The trickiest thing for a running back like him, a running back like Devin Achane, is when you get to the NFL to realize that you can't outrun everybody. Now, Achane hasn't really learned that yet, but he's doing just fine. So what you see with these speed backs is a lot of times they try to bust runs outside that shouldn't go, and it ends up being a negative play, and you forego a good run lane. I think James Cook has almost come in and overcorrected that, where he doesn't try to bounce runs outside where the blocking calls for it to go outside. It's like he's very determined to prove he's a between the tackles runner. Last night, right through the hole, it was a triple team block. I don't know what the Dolphins were calling on defense, where they had Hand getting blocked by 3 guys. He's not even a good run stopper anyway. The hole was there, and then he beats the linebacker to the outside long, and then it's just him and Jordan Poyer in a foot race, and we all know how that's going to go. And I love the burst. I love the decisiveness, and I love the explosion. It's everything I dreamed of about James Cook, the runner. We knew how fantastic James Cook, the receiver, could be. If he starts to put together this thing as a runner, holy cow, now you're talking about a dynamic playmaker. It's one game. I'm still not ready to put him in the Hall of Fame, but I love what I saw out of James Cook last night.
You know what James Cook's running style has kind of reminded me of? Because I'm in agreement with you for the most part. It's almost like big brother syndrome or little brother syndrome. He wants to run like his big brother, Dalvin. Mm-hmm. He's almost trying to make a point of it at times where it's like, hey, man, you're not Dalvin Cook, and that's okay. Like, you're not as big as Dalvin Cook, who could kind of also slip through those tackles or slip through the offensive line, slip through the gaps, and then all of a sudden hit that second gear and burst. It's like, it's okay to take this one outside and still utilize your speed. To your point, even though, coming in out of college, I think Ray Davis had quite literally that, where he tried to bounce it outside last second, thinking he could just, you know, take the edge like he used to in college. And it's like, oh no, this is the NFL. If you try to just bounce it outside for basically no reason, you're going to get got, and it's a negative play, and sorry. And James Cook has kind of done it in the complete opposite sense, where it's like, he really does want to keep it in between the tackles. He wants to show that he can be that guy. And, dude, like, you're fast enough that if it calls for it, man, take it. If it only works out to be 4 or 5 yards, so be it. It's okay. If it's calling for it, you are one of the faster guys out there. Let's see what happens. And then, yes, the actual touchdown run where you got into the foot race with Jordan Poyer, as soon as he got to the second level and I saw Poyer sitting there, I already got up off my couch. Like, yeah, that was done. We know for years now, unfortunately for Poyer, we've known where his athletic capabilities have gotten him at this point. It's not for his running abilities anymore. It's more for his ability to still tackle people 18 inches off the ground. If James Cook can continue to do that, even against non-Jordan Poyer safeties, once he hits the second level, it's going to be... I thought it was a little over the top when they started mentioning Thurman Thomas's name at one point, but
oh, like, Lordy.
I don't know if that was during the broadcast or if that was during a thing this morning, but I heard someone say it and I was like, let's long way till the brakes. Yeah, long way. But it is nice to think that James Cook could maybe figure it out to be that kind of dual purpose back. He's got both things in his bag and you have to defend him and honor him both for his pass catching abilities, but also on the ground. You have to respect him for it if he can figure it out. And it does, it slowly feels like it's getting there, Josh. It really does. And last night was finally that time where, just like the Dallas game last year, it all kind of started working out. And if he can do that a little bit more consistently, and then less of the weight is on Josh Allen. Josh Allen is going to be a very happy SOB if that keeps happening. He's going to be a very happy person. After the game, when he was sitting there right next to Fitzy on the actual panel and just talking, he looked glowing. He was so happy that he basically had to do nothing. He didn't have to put his body on the line. He didn't have to do quite literally what he had to do the week prior, that then had his hand wearing an offensive lineman glove to protect it. You know, he was a happy camper that he showed up and he got an A on the project by basically, you know, handing the ball off. I think he was very happy with that. So hopefully James Cook can figure that out. And then just to wrap it up, I know I took a little bit of a mini shot at Ray Davis. Ray Davis still looked fine after that. Yeah. I think it was just, it highlighted what you were saying perfectly, where it's like, he had a little bit of a, oh no, this is the NFL. And then he started hitting his gaps, hitting his lanes appropriately and getting a couple good runs in there. But James Cook, man, the sky really does feel like the limit as of right now. He just needs to do this a little bit more consistently.
The one part of his game I'm not sure will ever come is the contact balance. And you did see it on the touchdown run. He got a little bit of contact early in the run, kept his feet a little too much in his career of like gets tackled by arm tackles, a little bit of contact gets him to the ground. It's funny you mentioned Thurman Thomas. I will say this. I think James Cook has Marshall Faulk level route running. Now,
yeah,
Marshall Faulk never, ever, ever dropped the ball. Ever dropped the ball. Like, it's almost a meme where there was like a Madden commercial where they were like, okay, now Marshall, we need to film you fumbling for the video game. He's like, I don't fumble. And you know, he was like a receiver playing running back, but who also ran like Thurman Thomas. But like, he has the traits to be such a special weapon, and the way football is played in 2024, I think so much of that translates to what the Bills are trying to do. So it really is exciting to see. You know, I don't want to take a shot at Ken Dorsey, but it's exciting to see the Bills now using this weapon out of Georgia that was such a dynamic weapon, such a diverse weapon in dynamic, diverse ways. It's, you know, go figure. Okay, well, on the other side of the coin, maybe a little bit of negative. I would say that mostly underwhelming results so far for the passing game this year. Last night, I think 100% just by necessity. I mean, your quarterback's playing with an ailing left hand. The other team can't do anything. The running game is dominating. There's no reason to put anybody in harm's way. What is your concern level now that we are two games in, less, more, same spot you were at on the Bills' weapons?
Passing game in general, I'm not concerned. Last night, to me, is not anything you even remotely concern yourself with the passing game. You don't. The game did not dictate it. I do think this Bills team overall, if they can get in rhythm running, they will not lean on the pass at all. They will not feel like they need to. It's fine. Last week against Arizona, the game called for it. Eventually, you were two scores back. You needed to get things going. And it's like, all right, hey, 17, we need you to just, you know, rip out a couple of good, nice passes, figure it out a little bit here. And in a span of 1.9 quarters, you know, he figured it out for the Bills. Got it back in, you know, in control, and then they took it from there. This game, it was out of hand before it really even needed to get going anywhere, because I felt early on the passing game was okay, Josh. I mean, correct me if you feel otherwise, but it was fine. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, blink of an eye, you're up 2-3 scores. You get a defensive pick six, it's 31-10, and it's like, I mean, don't throw the ball. All you would do is introduce a way for Miami to potentially get back in it. You saw the first interception of the game. It's a bad timing throw on Tua's part, hits a shoulder, ends up in the defense's hands. It's like, avoid that by, hey, don't throw the ball. So in the Bills sense, just keep running it. Do whatever you need to do to just, you know, you're not milking clock, but you're just doing the thing you need to do to get wins. It's not the prettiest thing in the world. It's big boy football. That's what it is. It is That's how you win football games. That's how you consistently win football games. You don't always need to go out there and show why Josh Allen's the best on that day. It's like, this is why Josh Allen's an MVP. It's like, sometimes, man, just take your win. Like the Dallas game last year, this Dolphins game this year, just let it happen. Just let the game go away and dissipate. It's fine. You are, I mean, as you have it here, manage the game, run it out, and just don't put the ball in harm's way. That's the only way you can let the other team get back in it. And I think it's a beautiful thing. So concern for the passing game, there is none. I still, where concern for the passing game could develop is if you're in a game where going into the fourth quarter, you're down seven, Josh, and you need Allen to do something for you. Say it's, you know, 10 minutes left or whatever it is. It's not yet necessarily like it's 2 minute drill time, but it's like, hey, you need to get going a little bit here. If they're stalling out at that point, that's where concern starts. But we haven't even had that yet, and nothing otherwise has shown me that the passing game can't work. I love that they got Kincaid going early on and it just wanted to get the ball in his hands. There's a clear understanding of that. They're not just saying everybody eats, Josh. Everybody truly eats. And they will even recognize it's like they understood week one. It was a little bit disappointing that Kincaid didn't touch the ball. Not that I think Kincaid himself was disappointed with that. I think just in-house, they would love to get a guy like Kincaid comfortable and wanting to get him going. So right out the gate, what do they do in Miami? Two of the first three passes are in his hands. And that's the kind of thing I love seeing in the passing game. It's like you want to get your playmakers the ball, get them comfortable early, and just let things go from there. I don't think there's a concern whatsoever with the weapons right now in passing yet, because you haven't needed them.
Yeah, I love the effort to get Kincaid involved. I want to ask you a Kincaid question in a second. And then I thought Shakir had a strong game last night also. And I think going into it, you could kind of see that coming because Ramsey and Fuller are their two boundary corners. And, you know, Fuller still playing at a very high level. Ramsey, I think, is nursing an injury still, that hamstring injury. He does not look right, but he's still Jalen Ramsey. So I don't know how much you really want to go out there and test him. And Kader Kohu, after a strong start to his career, has really been a guy the Bills have loved picking on. And so you could kind of see that Shakir thing coming from a mile away. TJ asks, do you think MVS will actually do something? TJ, I think MVS is going to be a useful player for these Bills, but I don't think he's going to be somebody that is going to pop up every game, every week. And what I mean by that is I think he had an impact week one against the Cardinals, even though it didn't really show up in the box score. There was a bomb Josh Allen threw to him that was just barely overthrown. But if you know, if you dive into the All 22 of what the Bills were doing to Dalton Kincaid, or the Cardinals were doing to Dalton Kincaid, they were really bracketing him. They were trying to keep hit the ball out of his hands. The Bills caught them in that, got MVS over the top of their defense, and they missed the throw, but it put it in the back of their mind of, okay, this guy can get behind us. We have to come up with plan B because we can't be giving up 60-yard touchdown bombs. I think it'll be a more comfortable version of the Gabe Davis role. Gabe Davis felt a little over his skis as wide receiver too, because I don't think he brought enough enough to the position as far as the route tree and as far as where he can attack a defense. He can get you deep. MVS can get you deep. I think he can do some things underneath. He did catch an intermediate pass against the Cardinals, really, because they were so afraid of the speed at that point that he did a little in route and then he was wide open. I think he'll be a somewhat useful player, but he's a guy that I think by the end of the year, maybe he has 15 catches. And I don't know, Luca, that it's going to really matter that much, but I'd say by the end of the year, maybe one or two bombs connect with him and they'll feel like cool moments when they happen.
I think quite simply the way to say what MVS's role is on this team is exactly what it was when he was a Packer with Aaron Rodgers. I don't think it's any different. You know, MVS would randomly pop up 3 to 5 games a year with Rodgers in Green Bay because it was all connecting and they needed that guy to just hit the defense once or twice over top. It works out. As you even said, that the Cardinals recognize, it's like, we need to respect this. It backs everyone off. It puts the shell coverage on and then opens up everything underneath that the Bills realistically want to do: high percentage, efficient offense work, so on and so forth. They have the playmakers to make that work in spades as well. I think that's all MVS really needs to be too. Like, MVS is not a guy that I believe to be in this offense for regular, consistent production. I think the shot that he, you know, was missed on in Miami as well, it was another one where, I mean, Allen saw one-on-one and him just going deep and just tried to give it a go because nothing else was really there. And that's fine. That is MVS is there to take the top off. MVS is there to stretch the defense, to remind the defense that there is that big play still in this offense, still among those weapons. And you need to respect that, because I think without him, I, you know, your Curtis Samuel or your Khalil Shakir, they could do that if you want, but that's not what you want to use them for. So you needed someone else to fill that role, just like he did in Green Bay. I think why, you know, when he was in Kansas City, he took some flack is because they were using him as a more regular weapon. And that's just not his bag. Just like we talked about with Gabe Davis, it's like Gabe Davis was a really good utility, kind of put him in big slot receiver to take the top off. Like, that's what he was. That's not what you have now. Now that's what you have MVS for. That is what his role is. And that's A-okay with me. I don't need him to be a 1,000-yard receiver. I don't need him to get, you know, 5 catches a game. He just needs to be that guy who will remind week in, week out with one play if it needs to be. Every defense is like, hey, there is this guy, that big play is there. And then a handful of times, Josh, it will connect. Allen will find him, and it'll be a big play that's beautiful to watch. But that's all it needs to be. That is MVS. You have your Mac Hollins, you have Shakir, you have Kincaid, you have Knox, you have Curtis Samuel, you have Keon Coleman. You have all these other guys to do all the other things you need to do. MVS is there for one job and one job only, and that's A-okay.
Yeah, and it's important to mention, he is the 5th receiver in the pecking order, and when you factor in Kincaid and Cook, you're talking about maybe the 7th receiver on the team in the pecking order, or 8. One thing about MVS, too, is he's a lot bigger than people think he is. He's a big boy. He's 6'4", 206, and he gets decent run-blocking grades, and that will help him be on the field in situations where you can be in run-heavy looks, and the defense has to respect it, and that's where he can really catch you deep. So something to keep an eye on. Luca, I want to ask you about Dalton Kincaid. He was a guy that the fantasy community kind of expected to take that leap and be up in that tight end one range. And when I say tight end one, I mean like a top 5 tight end in the league. So far through 2 games, he has 5 catches on 6 targets for 44 yards. Last night we mentioned he had, you know, the Bills really concentrate on getting the ball early, but then the game script just got away from the Bills in a good way, football wise, bad way, fantasy wise. And nobody in the passing game really ate, including Josh Allen. Do you still think, if you did before, that Dalton Kincaid will have the kind of season that puts him in the top 5 fantasy tight ends?
I think it's still there. It's not like tight ends have really hit the ground running in a fantasy perspective. I mean, Isaiah Likely is your TE1 right now.
That seems unlikely. Ayo,
come on. So it's still absolutely there in a fantasy perspective from just a production standpoint and everything. It's one of those things where the first thing anyone ever said about this team, and the thing you heard from the players themselves, was everybody eats this whole, it's a collective unit. It's a collective target share, all of these things. That in mind, it's like, you should not be surprised if your guy's going to have off weeks. You should not be surprised if all of a sudden, you know, he goes from 4 targets like he did this week, and next week we see him with only 2, and then the following week he could have 8. I think game script plays into this, of course, just like today, just like last night, as well as other situations there where, you know, for the Cardinals, for instance, they clearly wanted to attack the boundaries. As you mentioned, the Cardinals were highlighting Kincaid, essentially. They were trying to take that away. So to get at the Cardinals, you had to establish the run or work the run game and then work the boundaries. That's what the Bills did. That's why you saw Keon come up with a big catch, and you still had big days elsewhere on the perimeter. It's okay overall. If you're a Bills fan in this situation, there's no reason to panic. I think, you know, tight end perspective wise, Kincaid's fine. It's, as I said, they wanted to get him involved early. It was clear as day. And then all of a sudden the game script just changed. And that's it, for all the right reasons, as you even put it. Do I think that Kincaid has somehow not become that go-to target for whatever reason? No. I think Kincaid and Shakir are still your quote-unquote go-to targets. That is absolutely clear to me. I feel no different any other way. I think that is the focus of this offense in the passing game. And if that's the case, there's nothing to fear when it comes to Kincaid's situation.
The one wild card I would throw into there that I still think, despite having 0 catches yesterday, I think Keon Coleman is the one guy on this team that can wedge his way in there. Where I think you won't go more than a game or two without Kincaid and Shakir letting their presence be felt. I think right now you could go a month without Mac Hollins having a big game, or you could go a month without Curtis Samuel having a big game. And right now I'd put Keon Coleman in that class, but I do think his snap counts have been high enough. I think they're in the talent level is there. I think he's a player that could evolve into that role. And then maybe he's taking some of those targets away. That would be a great problem for the Bills. All right, Luca, let's put a bow on this Bills Dolphins game with our favorite segment of the week, the post-game segment called Game Balls and Game Checks. The way this works is our game ball is our game MVP. They get our game ball. Pretty simple. We do not overlap. So if Luca picks, say, for instance, Josh Allen, he's probably not after last night. I will not pick Josh Allen. So, you know, if there is one obvious pick, one of us is going to have to go away from that. But Luca, oh, I guess I should explain game check. Game check is kind of like your least valuable player. It's the player that, hey, buddy, you really didn't even need to show up. We're going to go ahead and have you hand in your game check. Not literally. We'd probably get sued for that. Just more figuratively. Luca, who gets your game ball in the Bills 31-10 victory over the Miami Dolphins?
It's funny. My head says one. My heart says another, Josh. And it's like, I probably should go with my head on this one. I really should. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, Jamarcus Ingram is the game ball guy. Like, Jamarcus Ingram had a phenomenal game. And my head tells me that he should be the first name when it comes to the game ball situation. I mean, the pick six alone was great. Everything else that came with it on top of that, this is a guy who, once again, as we talked about early on in this episode, I mean, I was not comfortable with him getting meaningful snaps. You were not comfortable with him getting meaningful snaps going into this year. And he's making us, you know, eat our words. And that's great. Like, that's fine. We are happy to be proven wrong in this situation.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And against what will probably be one of the toughest matchups he will see all year, he handled himself phenomenally. And it makes it exciting to know that there's yet another reliable depth piece now on this defense that can fill a role when needed, if needed. And that is just a beautiful thing to have as a team that's trying to compete, of course, for Super Bowls. You need those guys because injuries come, and yet you have another guy who can step up, who knows what he needs to do and can do it at a pretty high level on top of it.
That's a great pick. I'm kind of have a head heart thing going on too. I'll tell you my heart first, cause I'm gonna go with my head. My heart is Sean McDermott. I feel like this is a guy that's come under a lot of scrutiny, you know, for the Tyler Dunn piece that came out last year where he made the reference to 9/11. The story came out, and, you know, a guy that has struggled in playoffs to shut down good offenses. People seem to ignore the fact that really only the Bengals defense has had success against good offenses. Like the Eagles and the Niners get run over by the Chiefs, but somehow Sean McDermott is expected to shut them down. But I know he's had his miscues in the playoffs. Last night was a fantastic McDermott night. I'm not going to take that route though. And then I would say, like, I think Baylen Specter would deserve consideration for coming in a tough spot, wearing the green dot against Miami of all teams with all the eye candy on Thursday Night Football, national TV on a short week. I mean, that's no easy task. I almost talked myself into Baylen Specter just now. But I'm going to go James Cook. I feel like, you know, kind of like your pick with Ingram. I mean, if we didn't come out of this with James Cook and Ingram getting the game balls, I think we'd lose a little bit of credibility. And, you know, James Cook, I don't even have the box score up. Do better, Josh. He had three touchdowns on the day. He had the long touchdown run, which I think really put the game away, made it 24-7. And then it went into halftime at 24-10, finished the game 11 carries, 78 yards and two touchdowns. What a fantastic play design on that first touchdown through the air by Joe Brady, using Curtis Samuel to distract the defense and also identify that they are in cover zero man. And then they just totally got David Long off of James Cook. James Cook is catching the passes this year. That sounds simple, but that's something he didn't do last year. And, you know, look, when you average 7.7 yards per carry and you touch paint three times, you're going to get my game ball. And James Cook absolutely deserves my game ball. Luca, not a lot to be upset about last night from a Bills perspective. I'm having a hard time coming up with a game check, but in the spirit of the game, I do have one. I'm going to hope you don't take him from me. Who gets your game check?
I'm taking him from you. I don't even know who it is, but I'm taking, I mean, it's Tyler Bass.
Yes. You didn't take it. Okay.
It's Tyler Bass. Okay. Hey, look, I'm not saying that it's like cataclysmic what happened. The game was already done, but that one miss, man. Oh my God. That was bad. It wasn't pretty. I mean, there was nothing good about it. And if you had to put one blemish on this game from a Bills perspective, in my eyes, it was just that one moment where, like, are those points going to matter? Absolutely not. Did the moment even matter at that point because of what was going on in the game as a whole collective? No. But when it happened, I still was just a little bummed out because it felt like Bass had finally turned a corner. I mean, even in this game, of course, he's hitting his extra points. Everything's going fine. And then he just has that one flub where it's just like, man, like that can't rear its ugly head when it actually means something. And that's still in the back of our heads right now when it comes to him and his performance. So Tyler Bass is my guy.
I got multiple tweet responses. I'm doing research as we speak. Last night when I said, hey, don't freak out about Tyler Bass. You know, I'm going to be fair. We were worried about him before the season started. He's made all the high leverage kicks. He misses one in garbage time. I'm not going to let that get me off my spot. Multiple people, Luca, responded. The kick was blocked.
It was. It absolutely was. But
it wasn't. I'm watching the tape really? Right now.
No, I thought it was blocked.
No, it was just that bad.
Okay.
There's a clean shot of it that's provided by the Thursday Night Football Prime cam right behind the kicker. And it makes it clear over the line, and it just knuckleballed it.
See, so, I was going to say it obviously it looks blocked. And then on top of it, I'm still disappointed in him if it was blocked, because that shouldn't be a ball you're even putting in remote harm's way. Like
the low trajectory has been an issue for Tyler Bass on the field goals.
Like it shouldn't be anywhere close to where someone could get a big mid on it. I guess on top of it, if it's obviously not even blocked, it's not like it adds anything more to it, because again, at that point in the game, it's not like missing 3 points mattered, but it's the overall highlight of this, Josh, is just, this needs to be something that doesn't rear its ugly head when it actually matters. And that's the concern, because it's still kind of there.
Kickers are like closers in baseball. They can do everything perfect, but you remember the time they screw up. And hey, they get paid a lot of money for that. So don't feel bad for them. And Tyler Bass isn't the only one in this world. Punters are the same way.
Unless Sam Martin, the Yankees closer.
That's true. That's true. Even if you're having a great season, it's like, oh, great. Mariano Rivera is going to blow this one. He's given us a save 10 years in a row. He's due. Let's see. Punters the same way. I'm not overly concerned about Tyler Bass to this point. I'm not overly confident in Tyler Bass either. I don't want to misrepresent my spot, but I still think when you look at how the Bills slowly came back against the Cardinals last week, there were some kicks in there where if Tyler Bass had missed, I do wonder about momentum. Last night, there were some big kicks on the road along the way when the game was still in the balance. So overall, I still feel good about the start to his season. But yeah, totally fair game check award, especially on a night where there wasn't a lot of duds. I'm going to go with Keon Coleman. And it's not like I hate the way he played. He put a goose egg up in the box score. And I was a little underwhelmed, Luca, with a couple of his run block attempts. Jalen Ramsey like threw him to the side a couple times to blow up the ball carrier in the backfield. And then I was able to watch the game on All 22 live on Prime. And I did notice a couple times that like some of his routes he ran just slow developing. I know he's not a fast player. That's not what I mean. It didn't look like he was necessarily going all out on every route. Like you could tell maybe he wasn't the primary receiver, and they can coach that out of him. They will see if I see that, they will see that. Okay. And they'll get that coached out of him. But you know, you need everybody to be looking like they're going to get the ball, or else the defense can tell pretty quick in the route, like, okay, he's not getting the ball this play. So all of that being said, not worried about Keon Coleman, but who else? I'm not going to give it to Terrell Bernard, folks. That would feel a little unfair. Let's talk about Tua. You and I are not doctors. We have not talked about this today. I know I speak for both of us when I say that was a very scary situation. It put a damper on what was an otherwise very enjoyable game for the Bills. When you see something like that transpire, it's really hard to watch. I know you have the same feelings. We've watched sports for a long time. There's just certain injuries where it's like you kind of become numb to it. Like a player breaks his arm and you're so used to seeing stuff like that. You're just kind of like, oh man, that stinks for him. Hope he's back soon. But then there's certain injuries that just kind of stop you in your tracks. And given to his history, given the fact that it's happened multiple times on national TV, your heart just goes out to him. Your heart goes out to his family. You know, your heart goes out to the Dolphins because, you know, they're committed to him. And depending on what happens here, that can be, you know, a tough financial situation. I'm not going to be the one that sits here and says Tua should retire. I don't feel comfortable saying that. I think he'll be the one to decide that. He's not going to listen to me anyway. Josh McCarty from Bills Chat will be nervous the next time Tua takes the field. That's just me putting my hand up, whether it's next week, whether it's next month, whether it's next year. I'll be nervous every time he takes the field. And I don't like that feeling watching sports. So I hope the best for Tua.
Yeah, you hope the best, first and foremost, and stuff like that. It's scary. It's unfortunate. You hope that the Dolphins are doing no discredit to him and you know, looking out for his health all steps of the way, because that was called into question a couple of years ago when we saw all the other stuff going on. And of course, the one Bills game where it looked like something had happened and they called it a back injury. There were things said that it felt like that was questionable with what they were saying, just so that they could avoid concussion protocols at the time. And then, of course, the very next week is when you saw the massive concussion where he was stretchered off due to the fencing position he was in, which we saw once again last night. What I will say on this subject is competitors. So Nick Saban was on McAfee show today, and Nick Saban is, of course, what his former coach. And he mentioned how he has not yet talked to Tua. He will absolutely be trying to reach out to him and his family. Nick Saban has a little bit of an intimate relationship with him, just because when you are a college coach of a high end recruit, you become very close to those individuals. That's just the nature of the process. And I thought what he said about Tua and his character and just who he is as a person was very interesting. And I kind of support just essentially what the mindset is with that. And what Nick Saban basically laid out was, you know, he's not sure what Tua is going to do, but he knows Tua is, of course, a phenomenal person and is ultra competitive. You don't get to where he is with that. And Nick Saban didn't almost sound fearful in saying that he believes that it's just not in him to call it a career here. And he will just support him for whatever it is, because Tua is the kind of individual where he knows and recognizes, Saban that is, recognizes he is thinking of what's in his best interest. His health, everything like that. And Tua's not going to just make a rash decision on this. And if Tua believes at whatever point in time it is that he can, you know, get back out on the field and compete again under center, Saban believes that Tua knows what he's doing. He's making an educated decision, and he's going to keep going out there and doing what it is. It's not for any other reason beyond that. He doesn't believe that he would be the kind of person that would try to do it just to justify to the fans or justify his contract or whatever outside kind of noise it might be about. You know, he is going to make the best decision for him, for his family, for himself, everything involved, and whatever he needs to worry about. So what I will say is this. I believe, and I live in this world where it's like, I understand myself. I'm with you. I think it's going to be natural. It's similar to like what DeMar Hamlin's situation is, similar to all these other individuals when they have massive, serious injuries that clearly have trauma also linked with them. And from there, you get a little bit of, you know, eek. You're a little nervy when watching it, and you're curious as well to see what the reaction is. But I think listening to Saban talk about Tua specifically and just where I'm at in general, I would like to believe that an individual as smart as Tua, an individual who just understands themselves as much as Tua, would make an educated decision what's in their best interest, both for football and then after football. And at the end of the day, if he believes that he is still good to, you know, get back out on the field and compete once again, that's the reality of it. He's doing what he believes is best. And, you know, as you even said, he's not going to listen to anyone else on it. And that's his decision. That is that. And I, you know, it's not like I'm sitting here going, I support it. But at the same time, it's like, what else is there to be said beyond that? That is just, he's going to do what he believes is best for him. And I think, you know, it's not wrong for anyone else to speak up on it as well. You know, you had Antonio Pierce just outright say in his presser today, yeah, you know, retire, man. Football's not it, you know, essentially, like it doesn't matter. And that's Pierce's respect to Pierce. That is his, you know, opinion on it and stuff. My opinion is I respect whatever decision Tua makes, plain and simple. If he believes that he will be fine and he can get out there and do whatever it is that he needs to do after the concussion, you know, whatever time off it is, and then he can get back out and compete, great on him. If he believes that this is it and he needs to retire from here, also good on him. Whatever it is, I believe, especially once Nick Saban talked about it and said that he is no dummy. He's no idiot. He knows what's going on right now. And he believes that that guy he coached for years, it's like, he's an ultimate competitor, but at the same time, he never puts himself in jeopardy when it comes to himself as a person. You know, obviously once you're on the field, it's a little bit different because, you know, quote unquote, you see red, like you're competing. You're not thinking about your health anymore, but overall it's like, that's his decision to make. And you just have to kind of go along with it, whatever it might be.
And I would implore everybody out there who's listening, it's very easy to be that person on Twitter who just types a tweet in 30 seconds, Tua needs to retire, send. And you might be thinking you're doing the right thing. But I think this is one of those moments where we have to realize, and it's easy to forget, like, think about someone like Ty Johnson, right? Ty Johnson is the running back for the Bills, made a big play last night. 10 years from now, most of us will have a hard time remembering Ty Johnson ever played for the Bills. And I don't mean that as any kind of way of being funny, but it's like, we just keep this train of fandom moving as the names cycle in and out. And so it's easy to sit there and say, oh, move on, retire. And then we'll just be like, okay, who's the next Dolphins quarterback? The human side of this is a guy in Tua that has worked his entire life to make it to this spot. And when you talk about how hard it is just to become somebody who's qualified to play in the NFL, you're talking about the 1% of the 1% of the 1%, the star in high school who became a star in college at arguably the toughest university to shine at because everybody around you is a five-star, worked his way up to be the starter, become a top five pick in the draft, butted heads with a coach early, was thought of as a bust, worked his way back up to become a star in the league, one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league, and is still young, to be told that you should retire, not because of skill, not because of anything you did wrong, because of a physical ailment that is out of your control, is a tough pill to swallow. So I am with you 100%, Luca. Whatever decision he makes, I will support it. And, you know, that will that mean that, like, I'm not going to gasp every time he gets tackled the same way I did when Alex Smith made a comeback, or the same way I still do when DeMar Hamlin makes a comeback or when he makes a tackle? No, but absolutely rooting for Tua here. And, you know, it doesn't matter what team anybody plays for in this situation. The human side of this is, you know, it's all that matters. All right, Luca, what else are we looking forward to this week before we get out of here? There's some exciting games. I mean, the Bengals, man. The Bengals just can't stop talking. And look, I get it. I think maybe people are forgetting how good the Bengals can be at their best, but they're not near their best right now. Jamar Chase is a shadow of himself as he's still like kind of deciding if he wants to be a Bengal. T. Higgins isn't playing. Joe Burrow doesn't look healthy. They lost to the Patriots last week, and you have Sean Murphy Bunting. That's who it was. No, Cam Taylor Britt, who Sean Murphy Bunting. Oh, yeah. Cam Taylor-Britt calling out Xavier Worthy, which, you know, I love, but he's like, oh, he's just a straight line guy. Put your hands on him. He can't move. You have Jamar Chase saying that everybody knows the AFC goes through us.
Yeah. Cam Taylor-Britt, you missed the one. He said, if you put your hands on him. And I love what Rich Eisen did. He goes, did you miss that one little word in there where it's like, if you put your hands on him? It's like, that's a pretty big if after what we saw through 1 week with Xavier Worthy. Do you forget that Andy Reid's really good at scheming people untouched? Do you forget that Andy Reid is probably one of the best, if not the best, at designing unique and fun ways to use those kinds of guys? Your Xavier Worthies, your DeSean Jacksons, those guys have a field day in an Andy Reid offense. So choose your words wisely, because the word if was your most important thing in that statement.
Yeah, I think that the Bengals are going to get their tails kicked in that game. I think it's a big Pacheco game. They can't stop the run. I'm sure they'll find a way to get Worthy involved. What are your favorite games this week? I'll toss out a couple that I like and then give you a chance to look at it. I really love that Sunday night matchup. I know when you first look at it, you're like, ugh, Texans at home against the Bears, but I am a huge believer in the Bears defense. I've been saying this, you've been saying this, like that defense on paper, they have so much talent. I like Matt Eberflus as a defensive play caller, and I'm very curious to see how they stand up to what I think is going to be an elite offense in this league in the Houston Texans. Now, it could be a situation like the Carolina Panthers experienced last week, where if your offense gives you no support, it doesn't matter how good your defense is. I'm curious to see what we get in the second game of Caleb Williams. It looks like Keenan Allen and Roman Dunze are both maybe on the doubtful side of questionable. That's not good. But in general, I'm curious about that chess match. Very curious about how the Jets look rebounding off of that Monday night game, going into Tennessee, which won't be easy. I think Tennessee has a sneaky good defense, but that's a game to me, Luca, I think the Jets need to win.
The Jets-Titans one is, yeah, I mean, can you imagine that there is, I think you can actually talk yourself into this, Josh, going into next week's Thursday night game, which is Jets-Pats, Patriots. There is a world, somehow, some way, where you can have a 2-0 Patriots playing an 0-2 Jets team. And what a wild turn of events that would be from what we expected that game to be going into the year. So yes, the Jets, Titans, Jets have to have it. It's not a must win game. It's week two. We have to remind it, just as if the Bills would have lost this Miami game. It's week two. It's not the end of the world. Just like we haven't won the division because we beat the Dolphins week two. It does kind of feel like the division will still come through Buffalo. But overall, a little bit. But overall, we haven't won the division. We haven't even come close yet. A lot of football still to be played. The Jets need that one, though. The Chiefs, Bengals one. If it wasn't for the fact that the Chiefs historically don't cover games, Josh, I would have probably included that in my locks because the Bengals are just absolutely atrocious in September. Joe Burrow's actually, I believe, if I remember, I don't know the actual record, but I want to say he's bottom five among all active NFL starters when it comes to records in September. It is fascinating because, of course, that means Joe Burrow is quite literally one of the best records following September among starters in the league because they've had a lot of success. But it's you just can't trust Chiefs with 6 points to cover. I mean, for whatever reason, they just find ways not to cover games. It's very weird. They were a toe away from not covering against the Ravens. So yeah. It's a crazy circumstance. That'll be a fun game. Rams Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
Best 0-1 versus 0-1 game on the slate.
Agreed.
It is going to be a great game. It's going to, if you like betting overs, look, it didn't make my locks, but I love over in that game. And also it feels a little weird that the Cardinals are favored. I get it, but not actually if you look under the hood.
Look under the hood. There's a reason.
A lot of things going on with the Rams that it makes a little bit more sense. It makes me a little fearful when it comes to the Cardinals, though. I will say it's like things seem too good. Another game, honestly, that I'm looking forward to outside of Bucks Lions. I think that one on paper is phenomenal as well. It's a replay of the divisional game last year, of course. And it should be a lot of fun. That's one that I think is actually a sneaky under because it feels too much like an over. Colts Packers, though, Josh, Malik Willis getting a start against Anthony Richardson and the Colts. It was an 8-point swing. Not to get too much into betting talk here, but it was an 8-point swing from the opening line of what it was when Jordan Love would have been starting to where Malik Willis is. So that means the Packers would have been around 5-point favorite. And instead now you have the Colts getting even the hook, unfortunately, at -3.5 where it opened. I think it's currently at 3 even. If you're the Colts, you have to win this game.
Yes.
It's weird to say that. It's, again, week two, and you're on the road in Green Bay.
No, like 100% with you.
Yeah. Like, it's a weird, if you just take that, it's like, you don't have, like, going into the year, you would have been like, this is a loss, and mm-hmm. that's okay. But now things have changed, and you showed that you can compete with the big boys after last week, in my opinion. You showed you could go toe-and-toe with one of the most hyped teams going into the year being the Houston Texans, of course. And you were just kind of, you just came ever so slightly short. And Anthony Richardson showed, even in 9 completions total, everything that he can be and every reason that I believe the Colts can sneakily potentially win that division. Wink, wink. If you have plans on potentially making the playoffs and even sniffing the division, you cannot be losing to Malik Willis and the Green Bay Packers. I believe in their defense. I think the Packers defense is still solid, but overall, what in the world is that offense going to do with Malik Willis, who last time he started, Josh, or was in a game, I don't remember if he started that Titans game against the Chiefs, Vrabel had to coach his ass off to get that thing into overtime where Malik Willis could not move the ball forward. He just couldn't do it. So it was why Vrabel instantly gained my respect, because you had a quarterback that made you want to have Ryan Lindley out there starting under center, not Malik Willis. And Ryan Lindley is held in very, he's Nathan Peter level to me, just to put that in perspective, individuals. So yeah, if you're the Colts, that's the other game, Josh, that I'm looking at. And I'm like, I will be pretty fixated on it, to be quite honest. One, because I love watching Anthony Richardson play. And two, there's something about the Colts that I just enjoy watching. And then I do also like the Packers. And in that 1 o'clock slate, that looks like one of the more enticing matchups to me, especially with all the storylines going into it.
So I agree with you 100% on the Colts. And if you've been watching this show for a while, you know I have a soft spot for the Colts. I have family that likes the Colts. If I had a second team in football, I don't. Like, I root for the Colts to do well for my family, but I root for the Bills no matter what. So, like, if there's an end-of-season scenario where it benefits the Bills if the Colts lose a playoff spot, like, by Colts. But I am with you 100%. I love Anthony Richardson, but the Colts, to me, are that team that has a lot of sizzle. But it's always like an excuse, like, hey, we almost beat the Texans for the division last year if our running back would have caught the ball. Or we have this great quarterback who you and I both really like and are intrigued by, who just, like, he got hurt last year and, you know, he struggles to throw the ball, but then you start to give up on him and he throws a 70-yard dime to Alec Pierce. And you're just like, whoa, where was that from? You lost last week to the Texans, but it was close. It was a shootout. And you're like, okay, like, that's a respectable loss. We're out of respectable losses this week. This is a, you have to win this game. And I am not a Malik Willis believer. I liked him pre-draft. I've seen enough of him in the NFL to think that he's not a functional starting quarterback. But I do respect the hell out of Matt LaFleur. And I do think that with some of the athletic attributes that Malik Willis has, that Matt LaFleur can coach him up, scheme him up in a way that can put pressure on the Colts defense for one game. Fascinated by that matchup. And I agree with you. The Colts need to win, and I think they need to look like the considerably better team in that game. Another game that I mean, New England Seattle is just somewhat interesting, just because of the fact that, you know, let's see if New England can back it up two games in a row.
I think New England will win that game. Just put it down. Let's see how bad this take gets come Sunday. But I think New England wins, Josh.
You want to bet on it?
There's how much we bet about it?
I'm not a Seattle believer. Ken Walker being out, less than ideal. But I was gonna be like Geno Smith. I'm not a Geno Smith guy, but it's just like Jacoby Brissett.
Let me put it this way: I already threw one game after watching New England against Cincinnati. Not that I'm overly thinking Cincinnati's a juggernaut. I will say I'm down, I think, compared to most on Cincinnati. I believe in Mayo as a coach. Yeah. There's something there. And because of that, I believe in Mayo as a coach more than the first year coach on the other sideline. And I don't believe in either team. So I'm going to take the coach I believe in more. Let's just put it that way.
Mayo is in the rare situation where being the guy to follow the guy isn't a bad thing. Yeah. Because Belichick, for my money, is the best coach of all time in the NFL. But by the end, he wasn't winning. But he was still that hard ass that I think had to wear thin on his team. I think there's a real Brian Flores to Mike McDaniel transition potential here with Jerod Mayo, who I don't think he's as much of a player's coach as Mike McDaniel. But I think he's kind of a breath of fresh air. He understands players. Obviously, he was one not too long ago. And I think there's a sense of, like, relief in that building. And, you know, not to pat ourselves on the back, Luca, but you can go back to 2 years ago when you, me, and Stokes were losing our mind as Christian Gonzalez fell down the draft board. And boy, oh boy, after one game this year, does he look like an absolute star? Two more games I want to mention real quick. I am excited. Vikings at Niners. I don't believe in Sam Darnold. Okay. But I'm rooting for Sam Darnold, and I would love to be wrong about Sam. I'd love to be as wrong about Sam Darnold as I was about Baker Mayfield. Let me put it that way. Where guy who was a top pick who flamed out in a bad situation finds himself in a good situation and revives his career. And if you remember, Baker Mayfield had a stop between Cleveland and Tampa, and then he got to Tampa, and it's been good. I don't think Sam Darnold's going to reach the peak that Baker Mayfield hit. I believe 100% in Kevin Stefanski. I think he is the kind of coach that that can elevate
Kevin O'Connell.
Kevin O'Connell. As soon as I said it, I was like, why am I picturing him wearing orange?
Cleveland.
I believe in Kevin O'Connell. He made the quarterbacks last year at the end of the year productive, and then they ran out of gas. I'm not thinking that Sam Darnold is going to take this Vikings team to the playoffs. In fact, that would be disastrous for the Bills, who own their second round pick. I'm just curious to see how long him looking functional can last, because it looked good last week. He's got Justin Jefferson. He's going to be playing this week without Jordan Addison, but he should get him back. They have Aaron Jones. Eventually they'll get the good tight end back. For whatever reason, I can't think of his name right now.
Hockenson.
Hockenson. So I think they'll get smashed by the Niners this week, probably.
Yeah.
But if they win this game, I'm going to start getting nervous about that second round pick, Luca.
I am fully prepared for Sam Darnold to continue to confirm to me in the world that he is exactly what I thought he was going into that draft. And I'm happy about that. And Baker is showing exactly what he was when I liked him as much as I did going into that draft. Because I think if we, not to bring it back to Cleveland here, but what was really funny was hearing all the Monday reactions where right out the gate, people are talking about Baker and what life would be like in Cleveland right now if they still had Baker, if they didn't run him out of town like they did. And it's like, yeah, life would be better if you weren't assholes. But overall, you guys have put yourself in this predicament. Sorry. With Sam Darnold, I'm not like actively rooting against him to bring it back to this game, but he's not good. I think Kevin O'Connell did a great job. We already saw against a very bad Giants team of squeezing all he can. He took that lemon that is Sam Darnold and is just squeezing the life out of it as best he can. That's what we've seen with Josh Dobbs, you know, and everyone else in the past. The marriage with him and Kirk Cousins was so good because I think Kirk Cousins is at least cerebral enough and understands football at a high enough level that it doesn't take Kevin O'Connell doing that. It's just an extension of Kevin O'Connell then out on the field. You're not going to get that with Sam Darnold. I think once things are starting to be, I think Sam Darnold has tells, he has trends, he has things about his game overall that eventually gets picked up. And even great play callers like Kevin O'Connell, he's going to be scrambling to try to disguise that as best he can or game plan around it or do what he needs to. But even that said, it won't take a long time for the 49ers to figure that out. They're just too damn good. Like, this is where the Niners are going to continue to show why they are one of the betting favorites to get back to the Super Bowl.
What hurts my argument, or not my argument, my curiosity on Sam Darnold is he was a 49er last year. And you would think that if somebody would tap into that potential,
he looked good when he filled in that role when, you know, they had a bench.
The two drives against Baltimore?
Yeah. Like, he looked
lit.
Oh God. Why? No, he looked fine. Like, he looked 10 times better than he looked like as a Jet, as a Panther. Like, he looked better. And I think it's not like he was exceptional. And I think you're getting the same thing out of Kevin O'Connell and the Vikings offense with him. So it's nothing special.
You know, I like this slate. Even Monday night, I'm curious to see what happens with Kirk Cousins. It sounds like he might be completely just washed, but we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Steelers, Broncos, intriguing to me from a quarterback standpoint. Bo Nix looked brutal last week. Can Mike Tomlin continue to win with Justin Fields? I think he can, particularly if he keeps getting against bad offenses.
It sucks we don't get Russell Wilson for that game. So annoying that we don't. Like,
Justin Fields is like a million times more fun to watch.
Oh, no. Yeah. Like, in general, yeah, of course. But no, storylines and just wanting to watch Danger Russ against the Broncos, who literally are paying him $30 million not to be on their team right now.
Well, have you heard the story that Mike Tomlin, like, prefers Justin Fields?
Yeah.
In what world is Mike Tomlin not the most powerful person in Pittsburgh? Why is it like he has to pretend like there's an injury? Just, I'm Mike Tomlin. I'm going to the Hall of Fame. I want Justin Fields. Like, be fine. I don't understand it. Yeah. The last one, you mentioned the Bucks earlier. I think Bucks Lions rematch of the divisional round last year is a fascinating game. And, I think a lot of the Bucs' success last week was impressive, but I also think a lot of it was the fact that I think the Commanders are going to have really bad days against a lot of teams. I'm curious to see what they can do in another environment where I think they'll have to put up some points to keep up with the Lions. That could be a really fun NFC matchup. I don't know, Luca, anything I haven't mentioned yet that really sticks out to you on this slate?
No, other than Ravens might put up 50. And if you are watching Chargers Panthers on any screen in your house, you need to reevaluate your life, because that is going to be the most miserable game to watch of all time.
It is the best feeling in the world to watch a relaxing Sunday afternoon of football, knowing that your team already has a win in the win column. We can all enjoy that with the Bills' victory over the Dolphins on Thursday. For Luca, I am Josh McCarty. This has been Bills Chat Live. We will be back next week, next Monday, for what will be a pregame show for Bills Jaguars. It'll drop Monday, where all your audio podcasts can be found. It'll also be right here on Bills Chat YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, please take a moment to like and subscribe. It helps us out so much as we are trying to turn this into your one-stop shop for all Buffalo Bills content. For Luca, I am Josh McCarty. We will talk to you next time on Bills Chat.